that years ago. I don't know, boss. This is the first I've heard about it. Though I'd always suspected that Uncle Doge might be able to do something besides crochet with a sword. In fact, his skills with a blade always did seem almost magically augmented. How could a guy pull off something like that attack on the deceivers at Charandaprash without getting swamped by sheer weight of numbers? I don't know why, but I told Lady, my wife isn't dead. The deceivers never touched her when they raided our apartment. Tide and Doge and some cousins took her away, then told me she was dead. They also convinced her that I was dead while they were taking her back to the swamp. They've got her stashed in a temple there now, where she won't embarrass them by being pregnant. Doge and Goda don't want us two together. They only ever put up with it at all because Goda's parents insisted. Sorry, her family and the Yuan Bao were not something I'd discussed with Lady before. I never talked with her much about anything except stuff that needed to go into the annals or the stuff that she'd written there that needed clarification. She checked Howler again while she listened to my chatter. She suggested,
"Tell me all about this. I've always had a feeling that there was something going on."
"Yeah, right." Her and everybody else smart enough not to eat dirt. Croker went to the doorway and stuck his head out. He popped back inside. "Hey, why didn't you say it stopped raining? Maybe I can get these assholes to move a little faster now." Out he went. I felt for him. He looked even more worn out than I felt. I said, "I did tell him."
"He doesn't always listen. Talk to me about the Nguyen Bao."
I talked. Lady listened. She asked sharp questions. I returned the favor at times, when we touched on anything I thought I wanted to know. She said,
"I want to know about your dreams, too. They're different than yours, I think." "I know. How they're different might mean a lot."
We talked a long time, but not long enough for me to get out of trekking over to the Shadow Gate with the goddamn standard. Chapter 76. Horses were in short supply. Most that hadn't gotten eaten had been killed by shadows the previous night, and were getting eaten now. I ended up borrowing Lady's mount. Croker never said a word. He didn't have to. Down the road somewhere, I was going to pay. Tide got up behind me. Lady's stallion, which was used to lugging only her 100 and a few pounds, plus armor occasionally, glared over his shoulder. I told the beast, "It's only for a little ways, I promise." The old division and some of Lady's troops had moved into camp below the Shadow Gate. Tensions were obvious as we rode in. A lot of faces were less than friendly. These were men who'd stayed with the company mainly because their chances of survival were better with us than away from us. Twilight wasn't far off, though, so no one was inclined to belligerence. I decided not to tell anybody why I'd brought the standard. Word spread fast. Company brothers came out to see if there was anything special in the wind. I ran into people I hadn't seen for months. Some, even whom I hadn't seen since we'd left Taglios. Sindawe and Isi appeared. They thought something big had to be up since I had come out of my hole. I could see how they might have gotten that odd notion. My job had kept me close to smoke for a long time. Ochiba materialized. He and the other two Nar were the senior officers outside the Shadow Gate. All the most senior Taglians had deserted. They'd respected their obligations to their prince. I suspected they would regret choosing to maintain their honor, if they hadn't done so already, last night. Sindawe caught the stallion's reins. Taide and I dismounted. Everybody waited for me to say something. I just shrugged. I pulled my pants away from my burning thigh. Riding had been no improvement, just as I had predicted. "Don't ask me why I'm here. The old man said to come, so I came. What he's up to is his secret."
"So what else is new?" Big Bucket asked. "He ever does say what's what, nobody will believe him."
I glanced around. The ground there was harder than it was back across the way. It was also drier. Most of the shelters, therefore, were above ground. The camp gave poverty and squalor a bad name. I saw the ensigns and pennons of battalions that had, a year ago, been renowned for their spit and polish. I asked, is morale really this bad?
It is over here.
From what I hear, the new division suffered fewer casualties than anybody last night. Sindawi observed,
you have been in this business most of your life, Standard Bearer. You know morale can have little to do with the facts of a situation. Perceptions are more critical.
Absolutely. People want to believe what they want to believe, good, bad, or indifferent, and don't confuse them with facts. I said, we maybe shouldn't mention it to these guys, but I think he expects to head on up there soon. Bucket glared up the unwelcoming slope.
You're shitting me.
You didn't believe him when he said that's where we're going? He's never made a secret of the fact that we're headed for Katovar. It's what we've been doing since we left the Barrowland. Half a lifetime ago, it seemed, before he ever joined up. Grimly, Isi observed,
I don't think you'll find anyone here who actually believed we'd get this far.
And he hadn't been with the company as long as Bucket had. Isi was not exaggerating. I don't think anyone but the old man ever really believed in Katovar. The rest of us went along because we had nowhere else to go and nothing else to do but follow the standard. Every day was a gift of sorts, and did not much matter where the long night caught up. I said, the last human obstacle went down last night. Lady has long shadow wrapped up like a birthday present. I glanced around again. Everywhere I looked, men were hard at work. It wasn't something special suddenly put on for me, but I did garner plenty of resentful stares just for being a guy from headquarters. Me turning up could only mean more demands, more work, more hardship. The light was getting strange. There wasn't a lot of daylight left. What are they doing over there? I asked, indicating a work gang apparently digging a defensive trench. Against shadows, that would be as useful as teats on a bull.
Burying last night's dead, Bucket told me.
Oh, look, you stick with me, unless you've got something critical going. The rest of you go ahead with whatever you were doing. Sindawi told me,
you see, or I would be better guide, Standard Bearer. We're in charge, so we don't do much.
He said that with such a straight face, I almost thought he meant it. I walked over to the mass grave. They were digging a trench because that was the most efficient way to get bodies under the hard ground. I knelt, ran my fingers through what they had broken loose. Despite the rain earlier, the hard pan was dry, just inches beneath the surface. It didn't rain much over here? I asked.
Mostly it just gets cold, Isi said.
I stared up the slope past the shadow gate. The ground grew more barren by the yard. There was some plant life up there, but it was stunted, desert-like growth. The corpses the soldiers were planting bore the stamp of shadow death. They were all shriveled up, with skin darkened several shades. Each dead man's mouth was open in a screaming rictus. The bodies were curled. They could not be straightened. Crows circled, but the soldiers kept them back. I felt the hard soil again, eyed the slope. The rock itself looked like hardened mud, lying in hundreds of thin layers, being gnawed away slowly by time. I guess it wouldn't rain a lot up there either, then. Or there would be more gullies and obvious washes. I wondered if erosion would create ways for shadows to escape from beyond the Shadow Gate. Evidently not. Otherwise, the world would have been overrun a long time ago. I had never found any record of a time when the Shadow Gate had not been there. It was ancient beyond reckoning, but even so, had not found its way into native religion in any form I recognized, except, possibly, in the infrequently used idiom, common to many southern languages, glittering stone, which seemed to mean an inexplicable possession of dark madness, a sort of demonically savage insanity complicated by congenital stupidity. One of those things Taglians won't discuss with outsiders. However pressed. Until the rise of the Shadow Masters, there had been very little historical mention of the land beyond Kialune. except that it tied in somehow with the rise of the free companies of Katovar over 400 years ago. Though not religious myself, I bowed and offered a short Guni prayer for the dead before I ventured uphill for a closer look at the source of our trouble. Tide beamed at me. I must have done right. Chapter 77. Help me plant this thing, I told Tide, as I set up the standard a few yards downhill from a working party of soldiers. Tide piled rocks around the foot of the lance until it would stand by itself. Then we walked uphill a little farther. Once upon a time, there had been an actual fortress with outbuildings and a genuine gate here. I had not been able to see that in my ghost world ventures. There were little more than grass-grown foundations left now. Everything had fallen ages ago, but the stone had not been carried away until recently, when some of our bolder soldiers had taken some from the safe side for use in constructing shelters, which suggested that, chicken shit as they were about the terrors lurking in the past, they were fearless heroes compared to the people who used to live near the place. Made me wonder again about how any fear could persist so strongly for so long, and then wonder if maybe Kina was not somehow connected to that effect. Maybe her nightmares leaked over into the dreams of everybody who heard the name Katovar. So why was I not dribbling down my leg? Maybe I'm too stupid to be scared about the right things. The stone that had been used to construct the fortress wasn't a native rock. It was a grayish sandstone, not only foreign to that slope, it was unlike any stone I'd seen back in the direction from which we'd come. It was not like the stone Long Shadow had imported to build Overlook either. I glanced back at Overlook. The setting sun was sneaking in under the clouds, firing the south face of the fortress. That was one wall that Long Shadow had gotten completed. The metal signs and seals on its face flamed and fairly thundered with power, despite the fallen estate of their creator. Now that's impressive, I said. But it doesn't do us any good up here, Isi observed. Glumly, Bucket nodded agreement. Sindawe, I noted, had faded away, gone back to whatever he had been doing before I arrived. What are these guys doing? The working parties were marking the slope and ruins with colored chalk dusts, augmenting similar markings that had suffered from the rain. Defining the bounds of the gate. Different colors mean different things. I haven't learned them all myself. I understand the different dusts will glow their particular colors in the dark if they're excited by the proximity of fireballs. Apparently, they define areas of threat and the level of danger to be expected in each.
That what they do? I asked Bucket. He shrugged. Close enough.
I grunted, moved up closer to the workers. As I did, I began to feel a vibration or hum that began way down deep inside me. It grew stronger, faster. I asked, who's the expert here? A dirty little man, irritated at being interrupted, unbent his back. I stifled a grin. He was Shadar, despite being small, and in charge of a Guni work party. He had a beard big enough for the usual 6 feet plus of his co-religionists. He wasn't a company man. I had noticed that over here, pledged brothers all wore something to identify themselves, usually some crude version of the fire-breathing skull we'd adopted from Soulcatcher 20 years ago. Maybe they thought that might help protect them from whatever came through the Shadow Gate.
How may I instruct your standard bearer?
Oh, that man was talented. Without venturing one inch from absolute propriety, he let me know exactly how he would like to instruct me, right after I bent over and grabbed my ankles. I'd like to know what you've determined about the layout here, especially where the gate itself used to be, if you know, and where the weakest spots are.
You want to know where the shadows are getting through?
Did the man stutter, Hairball?
Bucket demanded. I made a calming gesture, easy. Yes, where they're getting through.
Everywhere between those two yellow splashes.
The little Shadar scowled at Bucket.
The red area is what must have been the actual original gateway.
Thank you. I'll try not to trouble you much more. The Shadar muttered,
will miracles never cease?
As I went to walk over the ground, Bucket thought about adjusting the man's attitude, decided it wasn't worth the trouble. Not now, but there would be later, when I wasn't around. A few rods below the shadow gate, there were torch racks and the remains of bonfires that had been used to produce light the night before. There were crude bunkers where soldiers had lain waiting for the shadows, protected only by repellent candles and their luck with the bamboo poles. There were two rickety 10-foot towers somebody had thrown up to provide plunging fire. I pushed forward into the buzz until I no longer felt comfortable, which was right at the edge of the red chalk dust. From there, I could make out the remains of the fallen gate. It must have been truly substantial in its time. It looked like it had been wide enough to permit passage of four men marching abreast. There was no sign that there had ever been a moat or a ditch or anything such, though. And a ditch is the oldest form of defense work there is. It persists today below every wall that is not some engineering monstrosity like the rampart surrounding Overlook and Dejigori. The implication was that the forgotten builders hadn't been concerned about threats from downhill. There were still some strong spells on the Shadow Gate. You could feel them growl if you pushed against them hard enough. I didn't press my luck. I mused, why is the road in halfway decent shape when everything else here is almost completely gone? The farther uphill you looked, the better preserved the old road was. Nobody offered an opinion. Chances were nobody gave a rat's ass. It was bad enough they just had to be there. I strolled back down to the standard. Somehow, vaguely, it seemed to have come alive. I felt a vibration from it, too. That seemed to center on the head of the lance, which would fit with Croker's theories about the lance of passion. Tide, Bucket, and Easy felt what I felt, but didn't know what it was. I told Tide, I want to move the standard up where it'll be the first thing a shadow runs into when it comes through the gate. Let them know the boys are back. I told Easy, tonight shouldn't be as rough. Lady thinks she's got Long Shadow under control. She might even get the shadow gate shut down completely before dark. Which I doubted, because that wasn't very far off anymore. The relief on Easy's face was almost comical. A couple of soldiers caught part of what I said and scattered to start rumors that no doubt would grow fat in the retelling. Bucket grumbled,
I can't wait to see the twist that gets put on that by the time it comes back around.
We did not want any Taglians still loyal to the Pravindra Dra to become too confident of their safety. That's only might, I said. And even if she shuts it down tighter than a virgin's twat, there's still a shitload of shadows that got out of there last night and are still hiding under rocks and stuff waiting for sunset. Darkness always comes. We're not out of the woods yet. Not by a long way. I made sure I was overheard saying that, too. I will teach you to fear the darkness. Who said that? Lady's first husband, maybe, back before my time. Certainly somebody who learned a lesson of his own way back in one of the old annals. I added, we're going to face it every night for a long time to come.
We're really going up there?
Bucket asked, pointing when nobody but Tide could hear him. He didn't consider the question a major secret, though, or he would have asked in a language unfamiliar to Tide. Maybe. I don't know how soon, though. The old man keeps talking about getting crops in so we don't need to kill ourselves foraging. While I talked, I tried to figure how big a circle of influence the standard would cast. With Ty Day's help, I replanted it an estimated half radius from the Shadow Gate, mid-line on the old road. Then I went back down and talked a couple of Vedna into letting us take over their frontline bunker. Funny. They hardly argued about it. Lady's horse had followed me around the whole while, staying out of the way but missing nothing. I told him, thanks a bunch. You can go back to your boss now. I always talk to mine as an equal. You treat the critters right, they'll do any damned thing. Even run somebody all the way to Taglios. Or back. The horse argued less than the Vedna soldiers did. Off he trotted. I wondered how sleepy he was doing. He couldn't have run far yet. It hadn't been that long since everything turned to shit. Chapter 78. Chalk dust bands defined fields of fire for the soldiers, so they could pick off shadows more efficiently. But though they glowed, the dusts didn't betray the shadows perfectly. Lady had given me some tools and instructions on how to use them. I was supposed to resist any temptation to take shortcuts. A lot of soldiers came to watch. The Taglians were awed because a man who was neither priest nor sorcerer could read. They made me feel like a freak. Essentially, Lady's directions had me lay down strips of leather rope in semicircles around the most dangerous pass-through, which was where the original gate had stood. More ropes went down as spokes. Everything had to be done just so, none of which took into account the presence of the standard. If Lady understood that the standard was special, she never made much of it. I scuttled around inside the bunker we'd appropriated. It was barely 3 feet from floor to ceiling. There was room for four men and a pile of bamboo. The place stank. No one had gone out after dark, no matter how pressing the need. As a shelter, it was a feeble improvement over sitting out in the rain. I told everyone watching, "When a shadow crosses one of the leather ropes, it'll make a spark. So we'll not only know that one is there, we can follow its movements. As long as we stay calm, we can pick them off without wasting any fireballs." The situation there was grim. A repeat of last night meant not many guys would see another sunrise. "Not much of a mattress," I told Ty Day, patting the ground. "Why don't you get some rest?" Whatever happened, I had to sleep later so I could prowl, if that worked for me again. I crawled outside, settled on a comfortable block from the old wall. I studied the roof of my new home. It had been fashioned from a tent taken from the Shadowlanders. Everywhere around me I saw a wealth of plunder taken from our enemies. So much that in another month we would be as gaunt and disease-ridden as we were when we broke the siege of Dejigori. The big edge we held over our enemies now was that we were still around. We could pretend to be an army still. Mogaba's band was the best they had left. What would Mogaba do when he heard about Long Shadow's disaster? Speaking of disasters, real bad news was headed my way. At the bottom of the slope, where the road southward gave up its final pretense and became an eroded dirt track, Uncle Doge stood, staring up at the Shadow Gate. If he'd come any later, it would have been too dark to pick him out. Mother Goda was 50 yards behind him, still moving, bitching so loudly that I caught snatches from where I sat. Both carried packs, which suggested that they planned to move in with me again. They had become professional squatters. I flipped a stone at a crow. It wasn't a serious effort, and the crow showed slight enthusiasm about getting out of the way. He just leaned. There were not a lot of the birds around now that dusk was thickening. Though at their most numerous, they'd remained uncommon all day. Curious. I had seen nothing to explain the absence of the usual flocks. Nobody had started roasting them. Maybe they were all off taking care of Mom. I sat by the entrance to the bunker. "Ty Day, how come your mother and Uncle Doge are over here?" Ty Day peeked outside, looked down the long slope, muttered in salty Wang Bao, went back in and lay down. You would have thought he had no respect for his elders. He didn't answer my question. I checked the amulet I hadn't returned to Croker. I considered the height of my shadow-repellent candle. We should be all right. I hoped. Somebody a lot smarter than me once said, "Put no trust in wizards." I shut my eyes and waited.
"Morgan, you know a couple guys named of Wobble and Leadbeater?"
I opened my eyes.
"Rudy, you ugly son of a bitch, where'd you come from? I ain't seen you in half a year. How the fuck are you?"
"What's that? It's been so long I forget how. But I still got all my limbs and I'm still breathing."
"Makes you a winner in the soldiering game."
"Yeah, I remember Wobble. He was Jaikuri. Everybody he ever knew died during the siege of Dejigori.
He just stuck with us after we came out of the city. He was a stonemason by trade. He was with us when we caught the deceivers in the Grove of Doom."
"That's the guy. He made a good show in a Tyrandoprash, too."
and the other one, Leadbeater, I didn't know him.
He was some kind of Shadowlander, a prisoner of war who started out doing scut work and gradually turned into one of us, only took the oath maybe a month ago.
I knew, but I had to ask. What about them?
They didn't make it last night. I had to tell you, on account of you always want to put all that stuff in the annals.
Thank you, though I don't know if I like this or not.
What?
Only time half you guys talk to me anymore is if somebody gets his ass scragged. Then you come around because you want me to remember them.
Get away from headquarters, Morgan. Get out here in the field. Stop being one of them and turn back into one of us.
Damn. Apparently I'd crossed over from labor to management without noticing. You maybe got a point. We're in for some changes now that the Shadow Masters are wrapped up. I'll keep that in mind. Red Rudy grunted. He wasn't convinced. He headed back to his command, though, satisfied that he'd done his duty. I scrunched down into myself more tightly, shivering. A cold wind was blowing off the plateau. It was probably my imagination, but I thought there was a whiff of Kena in it. It recalled the persistent wind stalking the place of bones. It made the standard sway. I thought about piling more rocks at its foot, but could not find the ambition. I thought about a warm fire, too, but on this side of Overlook, after last night, wood was scarce. Stocks were being used for cooking only. Not that there was much to cook anymore but bitterroot. You will learn to live without the light. That was in one of the older annals somewhere, too. A pair of boots positioned themselves in front of me. Uncle Doge. I knew because Mother Goda was just down the slope, puffing and complaining. She would never catch up unless he waited, wobble-walking the way she did. Uncle, I said without looking up, to what do I owe this dubious pleasure after all these months?
You should plant your standard closer, soldier of darkness. You should be able to lay your hand on it at any time. Otherwise, you are likely to lose it.
I don't think so. But one of the Prebendra Dra's loyalists, a deceiver... Hell, maybe even some miner. He thinks his talent is a secret kind of wizard. Anybody can take a crack and end up in that ditch over there before they know it bit them. I was bullshitting, but he wouldn't recognize it. I hadn't done that in the past. It knows who the good guys are.
Mother Goda hobbled up. She carried a load as big as she was, everything useful that could be salvaged from our former home and the ruins of Kialune. That included an accumulation of firewood. I decided not to be totally abrasive, while the wood lasted. There are cooks in this world worse than Mother Goda. Among them are her favorite son and son-in-law. Uncle Doge, being both male and what passes for exalted caste amongst Nguyen Bao, carried ashwand and a quite unprepossessing pack. Mother Goda shed her load, dropped to hands and knees, and started to crawl into the bunker. As she met my gaze, I couldn't help grinning. She began muttering curses that, no doubt, were directed at the sort of evil fate that would unleash an earthquake at such an inopportune moment. The earth moved. One Eye would hear about that for however many more centuries he hung around. I said, "Let Tai Day rest. It's going to be another long night." As I edged over, Uncle Doge glimpsed the little bamboo tube I'd tucked in my belt behind me. The cold wind was getting stronger. The cloth of the standard popped and cracked. Uncle Doge peered up the darkening slope, eyed the bunker, glared at me like he was developing serious reservations about having left his swamp. I said, "Sometimes you have to live like this when you do what we do." Mother Goda crept back outside, still muttering, verbalizing what Uncle Doge was thinking. I reminded them, "You invited yourselves along." Uncle Doge opened his mouth but overcame the urge to bicker. He settled on the other side of the bunker entrance, ashwand across his lap. Goda proceeded to scout the neighborhood, collecting stones. Our neighbors didn't object, despite rocks beginning to look like the only measure of wealth at this end of the world. I shut my eyes. Softly, just to be a pain in the ass, I whistled an air Sari liked to hum when she was happy. As it always does. Darkness came. Chapter 79. They let me sleep. And sleep I did, despite the cold and the wind, the cooking smells, and my own snoring. As nightfall waxed complete, I slipped my moorings to my flesh, slowly. For a while I was like tatters stirring in a ghostly breeze. I made no real effort to go, nor any more to stay. Uncle Doge's return, with all its unhappy reminders, had inspired a great lethargy. My heart's inclination was the breeze that carried me north. I loafed over mountains and across wildernesses, past all the conquered cities. I found Sleepy on the road from Taglios to Dejigore. He understood that he would be in no danger if he kept moving. No agent of the Radisha could outrun the steed he rode. The Radisha remained distraught about his escape. It was critical to the conspiracy that every company brother be caught or killed. If even one escaped, the plague would return. Like Narayan Singh, she knew. Darkness always comes. She had seen it happen already, after the disaster at Dejigore. She was terrified. She was convinced that the Year of the Skulls would commence shortly if any part of the grand plan failed. She had a great deal to say about Soulcatcher, and none of it was complimentary. To get herself shut of a dreaded ally, she might have taken on another, who was far worse. She remembered Catcher's tricks and treats of a few years ago. She knew damned well that Soulcatcher was less predictable than any natural disaster. The latest quakes had been felt in Taglios, though no damage had been done there. Some people were afraid that meant that the gods, or some great power, were displeased by what had been done to the Black Company. Croker had mentioned the company habit of paying back treachery so often that already some people were preparing for the vengeance storm. Again, that had to do with the terror of the company name that no one would or possibly could explain. Could that just have stolen into every heart from some shadowy source, never having possessed any substance? Was it a good old-fashioned Kina deceit? I really needed to get my nose into those old annals hidden in that room where, the Radisha had guards and soldiers searching for smoke systematically. One Eye's confusion spells would not withstand so determined an effort. They could not confuse all the senses of that many men all the time. She could not expect to find Smoke alive. She would just want to know what had become of him. I didn't want her looking, though. She might find my books. Stupid. I could have had Sleepy collect them while he was up there. If I'd invested a little forethought and had done a little planning, I could have had him kill several birds. I had to start thinking that way. We had no options to squander anymore. The Radisha was closeted with the most powerful priests. Each time I visited Taglios, even if only one day had passed, it seemed the priests had gained influence, while the wealthy merchants and manufacturers, many of whom owed their fortunes to the existence and efforts of the company, had faded farther from favor. Unless they were priests clever enough to have used their positions to mercantile advantage during the development of the Taglian armies. It would be interesting to see how well the new bourgeoisie had been able to shed old ways of thinking as the ecclesiastical peril grew. Was there one native-born Taglian with balls big enough to respond? The Radisha's effort to screw us had put her in bed with men she loathed and at odds with people who thought her way. The meeting looked like another arm-twisting session. The priests wanted further concessions from the state in return for ecclesiastical support. You could see the Radisha thinking that Lady had had the right idea when she massacred so many of their predecessors. I was in a wicked mood. I dropped to a point beside the woman's ear. Bo! She jumped. She moved away and stared at the empty air, color gone from her face. The room fell silent. The priests looked troubled. They, too, had sensed something. It struck dark sparks of terror inside them. I tried an evil laugh. Some of that got through, too. I felt the black dread fill the room. The Radisha shivered as if the temperature had dropped to midwinter. It was already planting season around Taglios. I whispered in the Radisha's ear, "Water sleeps.
She didn't catch that, but did not need to become more frightened. It's a saying of my people. Even water sleeps. But enemy never rests. Sari was asleep when I reached the temple of Gangesha. Just enough light leaked into her room to show that she was there. I floated for a while, enjoying being near her. I didn't disturb her. She needed her sleep. Me, I was immune to that stuff. Why was there any light at all? The priests had placed a pair of lanterns outside Sara's cell. Events the other night must have troubled them. I had to be getting stronger at reaching out of the ghost world. Was it a good idea to try? Did I want people all over the place knowing something was going on? It wouldn't hurt to have them scared. Oh no. But on the other hand, they would take steps to mask all their deviltry. I did a tour of the temple, seeking evidence of obvious attitude changes by the priests. I found nothing unusual, although the acolytes handling nighttime ceremonies were abnormally nervous. I went back to hover over my honey. Damn, she was beautiful. Damn. It was going to be harder and harder not to mention my disappointment to Uncle Doge and Mother Goda. Hell, we might be getting to a time when raising questions would be appropriate. They were a long way from home. They had nowhere to run. Sari opened her eyes. My anger melted away. Half a moment later, she looked almost directly at me and smiled her wonderful smile. Fish and rice must be good for the teeth, because she had the whitest, most perfect teeth I ever saw.
Are you here, Mur? I feel you very close to me right now.
I'm here, I said into her ear, with none of the wickedness I had shown the Radisha. Sari probably didn't catch any words, but understood that she had gotten a response.
I miss you a lot, Mur. I don't feel like I'm one of my own people anymore.
Because they won't let you be. Granny Hong Trey didn't stay around to manage the results of her sibilant mutterings. Grandpa Kidam didn't make it clear that Hong Trey's pronouncements were forever. Of course, the present situation might be exactly what the old lady had had in mind. She never wrote anything down for me either. The best of the diviner breed are never wrong because they never set anything in stone. The moment with Sari faded without my acquiescence. She looked troubled, as though she sensed me withdrawing. I wriggled but could not hold my position. Something back in the real world insisted on gaining my attention. As I drifted out of Sari's cell, several priests invited themselves in. One demanded, "Who are you talking to, woman?"
"Ghosts,"
my darling replied, showing her sweetest smile. Chapter 80. At first I thought it must have been just the flake of flint biting my ass that had brought me back. That bastard hurt. But as I shuffled it out from under me, I sensed movement against the starry background south of me. A voice inquired,
"Are you awake now, Standard Bearer?"
Sindawe. "No doubt about it." And I was having such a wonderful dream, too.
"Since the old man wants you to keep an eye on us, I thought it would be useful if you saw what's happening."
Unlike most Nar, Sindawe had a sense of humor. It included a major irreverence for authority, though he represented authority himself. He must have driven Mogaba to distraction back when they were best friends. Unless Mogaba started out the same way and grew out of it. A lot of sour old farts start out as all right guys. I had to roll onto my hands and knees to find the leverage to get up. "Stiff as a log," I grumbled.
"Buy a better mattress. What I need is a better body, like one that's about 15 years younger."
"All right, what's going on?"
"Thought you'd want to see what's happening at the Shadow Gate."
"Nothing bad, apparently, or you wouldn't be hunking around in the dark." There were no fires tonight. There were no other bold souls wandering around like Sindawe either. But the most remarkable lack was that of flying fireballs. Over here, there was an occasional pop on the far side of Overlook. Sindawe headed uphill, though that wasn't necessary. I could feel the lance. It seemed to be awakening. I could see the sparks as the shadows tested my leather ropes. I sensed frustrated motion beyond the sparks. I felt no fear at all. Always before, there had been fear any time there were shadows near enough to be sensed. The shadows grew more energetic. So did the sparks. They began to crackle and pop. The soldiers showed remarkable restraint. Not one man went bugfuck and sprayed the hillside with fireballs. They felt no fear either. Or maybe they were just veteran enough to understand that you can fool yourself, especially after a trial like last night. The stupid and the nervous would be over yonder in that trench that the survivors had so grudgingly dug. "Sky's clearing," I observed, maybe just for something to say. Over the rise ahead, that was as clear as it was when my ghost walks took me up above the clouds. "Oh," Sindawe seldom wasted words on small talk. "Recognize any of those constellations?" I did not. It was like I was looking at a completely foreign sky. Too many stars to see any patterns. "The noose," said a voice from behind me. I started. I had heard no one come up, and I would not have expected this speaker to move quietly. "Mother?" The sparks from the shadow gate generated just enough light to reveal where she stood. A form that may have been Taide loomed behind her, staring into the southern night.
"It was in my mother's book. Part of a fairy tale nobody understood, that nobody knew where it came from anymore. 13 stars that form a noose."
"I saw nothing of the sort," I said so. Mother Goda must have been stunned into another century, so out of character had she become. She grabbed me by the arm, pulled my head down, made me sight along her pointing arm. Finally, I admitted, "I see something that looks like a bottom-up water ladle right there above what must be the skyline."
"That is it, you fool stone soldier! 3 stars are hidden by the earth."
She remained particularly intense. "You recognized it, with 3 stars missing from a description in a childhood story?" A particularly brilliant burst amongst the leather ropes revealed the woman staring at me bedecked in an expression of profound bewilderment. It also revealed Uncle Doge behind her. He wore a look of exasperation which vanished the instant he realized I could see him.
"Gota, there you are. Nephew, what is this display?"
From much closer than I would have believed he could be, Taide said,
"The soldiers of darkness have stopped the leak of death."
He spoke in rapid Nguyenbao. He used several words that weren't clear to me. I counted on context to unravel their meanings. Uncle Doge told Mother Goda,
"I have cautioned you about your tongue. I'll caution you, your mountebank."
I think mountebank is what she meant. Wrapped up in the word she chose was a root meaning fraud, with a superlative prefix hung out front. It sounded like a cousin word to priest. Blade would have been amused. I was amused. Goda had restrained herself with Doge in the past. Compared to how she'd berated everyone else, she deferred to Uncle usually, albeit with poor grace. Now, they squabbled like children. I got the impression that their quarrel had nothing to do with what they really wanted to fight about. Even so, the tiff was interesting where I could follow it. Taide's special mission in life is to poop parties. He embarrassed those two silent long enough to get in the news that they were quarreling amidst all the bone warriors in the world, at least one of whom understood their blather. Doge responded instantly. He shut his mouth and went for a walk. I said,
"I hope some nervous type don't pick him off in the dark."
Taide went after him. Goda shut up only because Doge's departure left her to carry both sides of the argument. She considered starting up with me, but she recalled that, whatever I was to her daughter, I was a soldier of darkness too. Anyway, I wasn't Nguyenbao, and only the worms of the earth are lower than that. I was in a peckish mood myself, having been wakened prematurely. I said I rather enjoyed that. Goda made a sputtery noise as she stalked away. Of the general darkness, I asked, "Anybody know anything about a constellation called the Noose? Or any stories about it?" Nobody knew anything, naturally. Over the next several days, I asked the question of everybody I ran into and always got a negative answer.
Even Narayan Singh, a logical resource for information about nooses, seemed unfamiliar with the constellation. He didn't say so in so many words, of course, but Lady was familiar with Deceiver lore and knew nothing, nor was she able to pry anything out of the living saint. Poor guy seemed destined to be the living martyr, Narayan Singh. The heartline of his existence consisted of unrelenting terror. After assuring myself that the Shadow Gate was holding, I ambled back down to my bunker. The standard seemed almost aglow with power. Something noteworthy was going on there. I would have to go see Croker, if my inner thigh healed enough, if I ever got any sleep. My in-laws were no problem. None had gone back to our nasty little bunker. I had its stone floor and stink to myself. I was asleep about the time I chunked my head onto my rock pillow. Chapter 81. For a while, I just slept. In fact, I'm convinced that I dreamed normal dreams, though I can't recall them now. Then, gradually, my spirit slipped its moorings again, in a kind of tattered, fuzzy way that might have indicated difficulty letting go. I felt no resistance, but I wasn't trying to go anywhere. I was just drifting. I floated upward. It did take an effort of will, but I faced southward, trying to find the noose of stars that had gotten Mother Goda exercised. Yes, there they were. But I had to climb 1,000 feet to see them all, and even then, they were not easily discerned. They had dropped dramatically in a very short time. In fact, when I reflected on it, I could not understand how they might have risen high enough for me to see from the Shadow Gate. I did not let that trouble me, though. My attention was caught by something on the plain of stone. For an instant, I saw a ghost of pale light out there, about where I glimpsed that lump of darkness some time before. Was there something out there? I didn't go look. It never occurred to me to try. In retrospect, I can't understand why. How could the impulse not arise? How could I not actively engage the choice of investigating or not investigating? I don't know. I just sort of went, and continued on about my normal ghost time rat killing. I rejected impulses to search for Mogaba and Goblin. I can be lazy, even when all the work I have to do is think. Finding them would take a lot of to-ing and fro-ing and calculating, and then I might not accomplish anything. So I decided to spy on Soulcatcher instead. By now, she should be recovered enough to be grumbling and scheming and maybe doing something interesting. Or she might just be laying around sleeping. Soulcatcher was just laying around sleeping. Surrounded by woods where every branch and twig boasted a complement of crows, it looked like every crow in the world had gathered around her hideout. It was unlikely they would starve for a while. They'd been living well. Already the earth beneath them was buried under their droppings. Shadows drifted below, whimpering because the crows wouldn't come down to play. Like a shadow myself, I wormed into Catcher's cave. I encountered the spells she'd woven to keep the darkness at bay. For a time, those resisted me too, but I was different enough to find a way through. Catcher was sleeping. How often did that happen? The Daughter of Night wasn't asleep, and she was a sensitive child. She felt me arrive. She sat up on her bed of damp pine needles.
Mother?
Catcher was a light sleeper. She sprang erect, alert, turning as she sought danger. She wore the mask that had been one of her trademarks in the old days. Mostly she'd done without it lately, but seldom did I see her in public, and never in the flesh. She resembled Lady, though she had even finer features and a more sensual air. Croker claims he resisted her seductions. Publicly, I believe him, but I don't know how he managed. I would have trouble, despite my devotion to Sari. Maybe it was just his age. Catcher's hideout was illuminated by a lamp that hung from the ceiling of the cave. It was a cousin of our shadow-repellent candles. It wasn't bright, but its light left no place for any little death died.
What did you say?
The voice Catcher used was that of a man whose throat had been smashed and could speak in only a hoarse whisper. Except this whisper was heavy with malice, a voice in keeping with the old dread repute of the 10 who were taken. It contained the compassion of a serpent, the sympathy of a spider. The Daughter of Night didn't react. From her response, Soulcatcher might not have been there at all. Catcher giggled, like a girl sharing whispers about boys.
Defiance is pointless. Stubbornness is meaningless. There is no one to help you.
That was the voice of despair. It rasped too, but it was the last speech of an old man dying of cancer.
You are mine to do with as I please. It pleases me that you tell me what you just said.
The child raised her eyes. There was no love for her auntie there. Soulcatcher laughed. She was a cruel thing at times. She made a gesture. The child shrieked, thrashed in agony. She fought her cries, not wanting to give her tormentor the pleasure, but her body couldn't be controlled by her will, powerful as that was. You think your mother was here? You have no mother, neither my sister nor Kina. This voice was that of an accountant reporting the week's profits. I am your mother now. I am your goddess. I am your only reason for living. I moved my viewpoint slightly so I could see them better. Maybe my movement disturbed the lamp's flame. Maybe a breath of wind crept in from outside. Whatever, Catcher shut up and gave a lot more attention to her surroundings. After a minute during which she just turned slowly, in silence, she mused, "There's something here, and you sensed it right away." The girlish giggle returned. "Right away, and you thought it might be Kina, but it isn't, is it?" Soulcatcher made a sudden gesture with her gloved left hand, fingers dancing too fast to follow. The brat collapsed, unconscious. Catcher settled with her back to the cave wall, dragged a pair of ragged leather sacks closer. I could smell nothing out there, but I bet she reeked as bad as Howler. She was vain enough to guarantee herself incredible beauty and sensuality, but not vain enough to waste much time on personal hygiene. Maybe the smell would help me push her away if memories of Sara didn't do the trick. She almost caught me. It didn't look like she was doing anything but stirring through her trash, and my thoughts distracted me. I saved myself because she was used to living alone or with crows. She reasoned aloud, "If it was the freak goddess, I'd smell her." And she'd try to do something stupid. But somebody else has been prowling around, too. Let's find out who. Maybe it's my beloved sister. The voice that spoke those last few words was powerfully vicious. Her hand sprang out of one leather sack, sudden as a snake strike, but I was on the move, cleverly not toward the entrance. Her all but invisible net of black thread whooshed past 2 feet away. As soon as it fell, I headed toward the exit. I didn't know if she could catch me for real, but I had no urge to find out. Soulcatcher laughed. This was no giggle. This was full-blown, malicious, adult amusement.
Whatever you are,
I can't fool you, can I?
She sure could. That was why I was getting out while I could. Like all the 10 must have been, she was way more scary than would seem at first exposure. The madness leaked through only slowly. Catcher made a series of gestures employing every finger on each hand. She spoke in one of those tongues sorcerers favor, this one probably that of her childhood. I felt a truly ugly presence approaching as I was about to slip my ghostly nose into the crack that would take me outside. A shadow wriggled in. It cringed. It shuddered. It responded to Catcher's will. I didn't hang around to find out what she wanted it to do. It was enough to know that Soulcatcher had discovered a way to manipulate shadows, which meant that, with the last Shadow Master barely finished kicking,
a new Queen of the Darkness was about to rise. She is the darkness. Chapter 82.
Was I right? Crooker asked. About the standard? What else?
He seemed exasperated. Maybe it was a strain, sharing quarters with Lady and the loon crew of Smoke Sing and Long Shadow. Probably. You could sure feel it. And nothing got by. I was worn out. My inner thigh ached again after the long walk over. But I can't prove that wasn't because of Lady's gimcrackery. The lance did something, though.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody felt something. Some probably even decided it had something to do with the standard. Ty Day had remained outside, as he always did when I visited the old man, so I wasn't shy about describing the skirmish between Uncle Doge and Mother Goda. Which was about this noose constellation? That started it. I think that was just an excuse. Their conflict runs a lot deeper. And this all just started. He smiled to himself, like me, probably, jumping straight back to Goda's business with one eye. And where is our pet hedge wizard? I asked. He wasn't out riding smoke, which is what I had expected him to do while I was away. Lady had the little fire chief all tied up. Crooker shrugged. Out of my hair, which is all I want right now. Probably off tending his distillery, which hadn't been found in his dugout when the rescue crews turned the place inside out, looking more for that than for poor old One-Eye. I said, I had a dream. Or maybe I was out of myself. It almost turned into a nightmare.
Huh?
Catchers figured out how to run the shadows. Just like our boy in the cage there. Long Shadow, though, was unconscious, more so than Smoke, who insisted on groaning every few minutes. Crooker sighed. I'm disappointed, but I'm not surprised. It was a logical step for her, and she's had time to work on it. You going to do something about it? Haven't I already? You lost me, boss. She's figured out how to manage a few shadows. Close up. But I control the source of the shadows, and I don't have to get near her, though I'm going to. I wouldn't get overconfident where she's concerned. You never know with her. Remember how she planted that demon frog face on us? I take nothing for granted, Mergen. He glanced at his woman, lying motionless beside Smoke, but I try not to let paranoia cripple me. He would get an argument on that from a lot of people. On the other hand, though, he had overthrown the Shadow Masters and seemed well-positioned to have us survive the perfidy of our allies. But Soulcatcher, I did not doubt that Smoke had been right every time he insisted she is the darkness. Chapter 83. One Eye caught me outside Croker's place.
Her worship still at it?
You mean, Ty Day's were only one pair of uninitiated ears nearby.
You know what I mean, kid.
She is.
Damn, I can't get 10 minutes at a time now that she started playing. Damned woman must be worried about her weight.
Took me a minute to figure that out. Then I laughed, remembering how hungry I used to get. That could do it, if she gets totally hooked. One Eye grumbled something and stomped off. He didn't go any farther than his dugout, though. He began fussing around the remains like a dog trying to dig a rabbit out of its warren, killing time while he waited to walk the ghost. I went about the business I had, mostly stalling because I had no desire to go back over to the Shadow Gate. After 10 minutes of slinging mud and trash, One Eye stomped back to me.
I found that little shit goblin yesterday. Last night? He was just about to jump on the Prabrindadra. I want to know how that came out.
Huh. Yes. I hoped he took the prince prisoner, if they had them an ass-kicking contest. I would rather have his sister scared of us than mad at us. Mad she would be if we sent her little brother to his funeral, Gat. She wasn't the kind to jump into the flames after him.
That bastard was getting pretty good when he turned on us. One Eye said, There's no guarantee the runt can take him.
You worried about Goblin? You?
Worried? Me? Hell no, I don't care what happens to the little shit, but if he croaks the Prabrinda draw, we're gonna be in shit so deep, we'll have to look up to see the horizon.
I don't think we can get in much deeper than we already are. They can only kill us once, and they've already let us know they intend to try. One Eye snorted. No way would he admit that he was worried about Goblin, though Goblin's absence obviously made him crazy. He hadn't been able to feud with anyone for ages. Nobody else would play. I asked, why don't you play a few tricks on Uncle Doge, if you're suffering some compulsion to mess with somebody who can mess right back? Tidae developed a sudden interest in our banter. One Eye didn't cheer up. He did ask, you figure Lady was right about him?
He don't look the part.
And you do, like a derelict in a slum alley does. You think she's ever been wrong about something like that?
She's still healthy,
One Eye grumped. Tide wanted to know what we were talking about, but could see no way to get anything out of us without giving something away himself. If he'd just been the kind who chatters incessantly, he could have asked anything, and nobody would have thought anything about it. I chuckled. Puzzled, One Eye asked, you going back over there? Got to, boss says. One Eye glared at the distant plateau.
Damned towels. Just had to stab us in the back.
I was all set to retire as soon as we finished Long Shadow, but they just had to fuck me up. And now I got to go on up there,
which I'm looking forward to, like I'm looking forward to getting a hot poker shoved up my poop chute.
Wow, here's my chance.
He scampered toward Croker's dugout. Lady had come up to the light. She looked more haggard than ever. She must have been walking the ghost for all she was worth. She leaned on a post while she spoke softly to one of the messengers waiting for an assignment. He hurried off toward her camp. She looked at me, frowned as though she was having trouble remembering who I was. Maybe she was. I was supposed to be somewhere else. I decided to go there, even though it was no resort for tired professional soldiers. Chapter 84. Mother Goda wouldn't talk to Uncle Doge. Mother Goda wouldn't talk to her darling baby boy. But Mother Goda and Silence had been strangers for decades. So Mother Goda talked to me. She wasn't happy about the way her life was going, though she refused to get specific in front of a soldier of darkness, family or not. I was in a karma-building cycle, apparently. I endured her crabbing, nodding and grunting in the right places, while I made notes concerning recent events. I said, you could always go home. Just pack up and go back to the swamp. Let Uncle boil his own bitter root. The root was a recent discovery. Shadowlander fugitives had been caught eating it. It was a common weed that wasn't completely inedible if you boiled its roots for 6 or 8 hours before you ground them into meal that tasted like soggy white oak sawdust. A lot was getting eaten because there was little else to be found close by. Croker still hadn't authorized anyone to begin exploiting Overlook. Uncle Doge had discovered Bitterroot long ago. He hadn't eaten much else since Chirandaprash. How had he found that much time to spend sitting in one place? Maybe he cured 20 pounds of root at a time.
You, bone warrior, you would have me abandon my duty?
Hell yes. Anything to get you out of my hair. But I didn't say that aloud. I just asked, what duty is that? She opened her mouth to tell me, but Nguyen Bao caution took over. She gulped like a fish out of water then, as always when pressed, told me,
I go get some wood.
That in Taglian instead of Nguyen Bao, which was good enough for me as long as I asked no questions. Good idea. Tai Dei came to stand by me as I watched her go. I said, soon the company will return to the road to Katavar. Your people need to decide what to do when that happens. I reached for a rock. I thought I made no giveaway motion, but the crow was ready. It just hopped over the whistling stone and offered me one mocking call for my trouble.
The blackbirds remained scarce, but there was always one near me and a dozen around Croker's headquarters. Catcher was lying low, but she hadn't stopped watching. A nearby Taglian, maybe thinking he could curry favor, aimed a bamboo pole at the crow.
"Save that for a shadow," I snapped. "We're not out of this yet."
Interesting. The would-be sniper wore a ragged, crudely drawn company badge. I saw no one armed with bamboo who didn't sport some version of our badge. The management had stopped pretending to be fair. Red Rudy wandered over, stood leaning on a spear. He stared northward, silently watching something. Nobody else said anything either. I took advantage of the silence to scribble a few more notes. Finally, Rudy mused,
"Ever notice how, when the light is right, you can see where everybody's going over there?"
"No," I looked up. He was right. Just now, the light had every piece of metal beyond overlook reflecting right at us, and a whole lot of metal was headed up the road I'd walked with that useless one eye. Oh, no. Whose bright idea was this? Somebody wanted a call on Soulcatcher.
"Thought you'd be interested."
Rudy collected his spear and strolled off, probably to find a deep hole to pull in after him.
"What is happening?"
Tide asked. I shrugged. Maybe just the end of the world. Or maybe not. Maybe somebody in the headquarters bunker was playing mind games with her sister. The sun moved on. Light no longer glimmered off the moving force. Nobody but Rudy seemed to understand what was happening, but everybody sensed that something was. It became very quiet on my far hillside. Nothing happened for a while. I made notes. I watched Mother Goda dwindle into the distance. Looked like she planned to do her wood gleaning farther afield. Afternoon shadows crept across the far foothills. "That's dark," I said, "especially near where Soulcatcher was last seen." That darkness was swelling. I gaped. That was no shadow. That was a cloud of darkness. It boiled out of the canyons and forests and masked the foothills. Crows. All the crows we hadn't seen for the past several days. The darkness rose like a blast from a volcano. It began to spread. "That's gotta be every crow in the world," I breathed. The cloud just kept growing. Parts seemed headed my way. Suddenly, lightning sliced inside it. The wind began to blow. I began to lose track of where and when I was and what I was doing. Somebody asked, "What's happening?" A second voice asked, "What's that smell?" Kina, but I couldn't explain. More lightnings ripped through the thunderhead of crows. Most of that darkness rushed my way. The stench of Kina became overpowering. There were sounds around me, heard as though from a great distance. They didn't include the panic that seemed appropriate. The darkness bent over and grabbed me, took me up like a mother lifts a frightened infant. The face of Kina was in the darkness, but it wasn't Kina who possessed me. She was angry. Again, she was disoriented. She was not alone. Lady was there, maybe riding smoke, maybe in some other fashion. The lightning was her doing, evidently. She had Kina in one sorcerer's hand while trying to spank her sister with the other. Catcher was there too, and she seemed amused, not troubled, although she was caught between a devil goddess and a sister who would roast her happily. Soulcatcher would go